Hello and welcome back to Cinema Continues, part of the Too Much Time on Our Hands extended universe. We are going to be talking about all the films we've seen in the months of February and the first half of January and a bit of March as well, like all the films we've seen over the last month and a bit. We've seen a fair few films as well, so buckle up. There are some good ones in here. There's some less good
And some
ones in
not
here
so
as
good
well.
ones.
Yeah, there's definitely some not so good ones in here as well. Dune 2.
Well, most
That's not true.
disappointing film of the year.
Oh, unbelievable. It's just fucking sand, isn't it? It gets everywhere. To do this, currently we have Dan. Dan, how's it going?
Not that bad, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm really hungover. I'll be honest. I'm hungover and tired, but I'm okay. I'm going to muddle through it. Can't wait to talk about films. There's definitely a couple of films I really want to go into as well. So I'm very excited about this. And Terry, how's it going?
Good evening.
We might be getting Steve later on, but he's expecting a huge consignment or something later, so we're not sure what's gonna happen there. So if
He's
he does join
waiting
us
to
for dinner,
receive a
be
big
thrown off
package.
the
He's
biplane that's flying over his flat. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully he does join us. If you're one of Steve's mates who've been after one of our podcasts for a while, do tell him that we made that joke. Yeah, let's get on then. So we're going to start with last thing films we talked about were Saltburn, Aquaman, and Night Swim. Safe to say the year did not get off to the flying start we'd hoped it would. But
Feels like a
since then,
lifetime ago that did.
God, it does, doesn't it? To the point when Night Swim's kind of dulled on me a bit because I feel like there might be a worse film, but we'll get to that in a bit. Next on the list, if I've got this right, I dare say you've got your letterbox open, Terry, haven't you?
Yes.
So you can help us through. So what was next up?
I believe it was Poor Things.
Oh my God, I can't believe we haven't
Ooh.
talked about Poor Things. Yeah.
I mean, it's on bloody Disney Plus already now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like everyone's watched Poor Things now. All the kids probably don't show it to
Can
kids.
go full on in on spoilers then.
Yes. I think okay, from here on in, unless we say specifically we're gonna go spoiler heavy.
What, for all of them?
I reckon so.
Ah, if you want. I just think like the ones where they're on streaming service, like you haven't got an excuse.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It is 3 hours long. That's the only thing I will say.
It's not 3 hours long.
It is, isn't it? It's one of the longer films.
No, it's doing a bit.
Oh,
But
okay,
yeah,
two
it's
and a
about
bit.
2 hours.
Fine.
2 hours a bit,
Definitely
yeah.
over two, but I don't think it was as long as June 2.
How about then we go non-spoiler for the first half of what we're talking about, and then we'll put a gap in, and then we'll go spoiler heavy. How does that sound on all the films? Should have talked about this before we started. That's the overwhelming feeling I'm getting It's
here.
always brilliant
Negotiate
when we
now
do
whilst
admin whilst
recording.
recording.
We've got
Yeah.
like nine films to get through, and like we're negotiating exactly how we're going to do the bloody reviews. Right.
We're so
Poor thing. To be
organized.
honest, I feel like
Poor Things spoilers aren't really spoilers because it's not like it's a twisty horror film or anything like that. We'd just be talking about what happens in the film.
there's a couple of twists in it, I would say.
Man.
Couple of big the big twist we'll get to in a bit, but Poor Things is rather good generally. Who wants
Oh
to give
yes.
us a brief synopsis of what happens in it?
Poor Things is with stars Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe as some sort of like Frankenstein like monster looking man, Mark Ruffalo. It's basically about this mad professor who happens upon a body of a woman who recently committed suicide and was pregnant. And so, he just did, the natural thing any scientist in his
I did
position would
the
do
only
when,
thing I thought I could do.
would be to take the baby out, take the baby's brain and plant it in the brain of the woman and bring the woman back to life.
That's,
Like you do when all in the name of science.
all in the name of science.
So yeah, it's just basically about a woman with like a fresh new brain in her body and experiencing the world for the first time, and she just learns to experience new things and grows pretty quickly. And that's it. But it's an amazing movie, though. Probably one of my favorite films so far
It's
this year.
definitely up there as one of the films of the year. So like it's about like yeah, as you say, about a woman that is kind of experiencing life almost through a different lens, like without inhibitions.
Yeah.
Like there's like a childlike innocence to her, but the things she's doing aren't particularly childlike.
No, certainly not with our apples.
Not with her apples, no. Exactly. Like at one point she becomes a prostitute. And has no qualms with any of this because there are like no inhibitions.
Yeah, she hasn't got any of those like societal expectations placed upon her, you know, when it comes to like manners or propriety or all these sort of things. So everything is kind of like just new, and you know, it kind of makes you as the audience as well kind of reassess certain things just on the face of it. It's like, yeah, why are we concerned about these particular things? Why is this bad? Why is this not bad? You know, yeah, it's it just makes it really interesting and quite funny as well with some of the stuff that happens.
Emma Stone obviously won an Oscar for this as well. Quite
Most
maybe we'll
certainly
get into
so.
Oscar. Yeah.
She was absolutely brilliant in it. Just watching her kind of development throughout the whole film, and like the way her language and her use of words kind of develops, and her experiences, and just the way she walks as well, how the kind of development of that as the story goes on. It's
Yeah,
great.
she does very well being like a 30-year-old baby.
Yeah,
And I
definitely.
also think it was really deserving of like the other Oscars. It got some of the Oscars that people don't really care about, but like production design, costume and makeup and hairstyle. I thought the production was amazing. And I read a thing that like Yorgos, I'm not going to try his surname, his thing was that he
Lanthimos.
wanted it to look like a 1930s film. He wanted real sets. He wanted it to be almost like a sort of posh version of the Mighty Boosh in some places. But he wanted it to have that very stylistic look, and I think it just looks amazing throughout. Like all the stuff, like where they go on the boat and they are on, in the different countries, I just thought it looked stunning.
Yeah, it's like when there was it in Portugal? They no, yeah, when they go to Lisbon first, and it's kind of like a fantastical version of Lisbon with like the great sort of set designs and all the, you know, the stuff in the background, like with the kind of like the sky trams and things like that. All just look very fantastical and amazing. And it also all the kind of the way the colours of the film kind of developed along with her perspective as well, which I found pretty interesting. So like at first it's just very kind of stark black and white. Very simplistic. And then when she first gets to Lisbon, it's really brightly colored and kind of all wonderful and new. And then, kind of by the end, when she returns to London, due to all her different experiences of seeing both the good and the bad, it's kind of become a much more realistic tone of colors.
Worth mentioning, Mark Ruffalo puts in a star turn in this one as well.
Oh,
He's
yeah,
in
he's
Mark Ruffalo
great.
is
Exceptional.
hilarious in this.
And William Defoe, to be fair.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe redefines how entertaining burping can be in this film.
I'd forgotten about that.
It's just so weird, but I love it.
Because
It's
his
so
father removed his stomach acids
yes.
and things like
Yeah.
that.
And you wouldn't think you need it, but
Yeah.
turns out you do.
Turns
In the
out you
name
do.
of science.
Yes, he wanted to find out what happened if you took them out. And so it turns out you need them.
Soundtrack's exceptional as well. One of the better soundtracks you'll hear in a film this year as well.
Yeah, very off kilter, but kind of suits the tone of the film as well.
Absolutely. It just feels like super propulsive, this film. Like it feels like it just moves along. And that's partially down to Emma Stone's acting as well.
Yeah.
And the way it's shot, it feels like there's constant movement in the film. In a
Yeah.
really good way. It's really entertaining. It's hilarious. Is it for everyone? Probably not. I loved it, and yeah, I'm with you, Dan. I think I'd be very surprised. It might have already been beaten, but I'd be very surprised if I see many films better than this year. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. I mean, I think a lot of people would like it. I've been trying to share it with people I know. You know, so I got my mum to watch it, and she really enjoyed it and like wants to watch it again. And so I think, yeah, and a few other people I know have seen it and found it really odd and weird, but you know, wonderful as well. Same time.
It's
I think
certainly
it's got
one
a
of the
really
more
good heart.
mainstream of the films that Yorgos has made when you look at like The Lobster
It's
and
great film.
other things like that. He has made some
Yeah.
fucking weird films. This is much more streamlined and normal, whilst
It
not
really
being
is.
streamlined or normal.
Yeah, it's I think it's got a really good heart to it, the film. I think that's the other side of it as well. It's like a it's we are going along for the ride with this idea of like she has got this childlike innocence throughout the film, and we are very much watching the film from her perspective. And at the same time, she's doing things that you can only do in an 18 rated movie, because of society more than anything. And it does, as you say, Dan, it makes you rethink a lot of things that happen in this film. Some mild spoilers, maybe. Actually, I don't know whether we need to talk about like her past life before.
Yeah, I don't. I think yeah, if someone's going to watch it for the first time, they can find that out.
It's genuinely one of the better films I've seen this year already. I am
Yeah,
a big
and look,
fan.
there's one particular scene I've seen it. I just love to watch, and I've just like found like a short clip of it on YouTube and just like watch it over and over. Is just like the sequence with the dancing
Oh, so good.
when
Her
that kind of
dance
music
is
starts playing
amazing.
and she starts dancing, and Mark Ruffalo joins in. His character's like this. Like these kind of this like cad, this man who just, bucks society and, just goes around like romancing women and then just, disposing of them. But like he ends up becoming kind of obsessed with her, and ends up becoming like really in love with her because he
Because
describes her,
she's so
sees her.
indifferent to him, isn't it? I think he's used to women pining after him, and she's just like, okay, no worries, bye.
She very quickly kind of like, gets over a lot of stuff with him. Yeah, and he sees her. He thinks she's this kind of like free spirit because he doesn't really know what her background is.
Yeah. Works really well. What was next?
On my list, it's The Beekeeper,
The Beekeeper.
a classic slice of steak.
That's the best description of it. Like, it is a Jason Statham film, and that is pretty much all you need to know about it. But the plot is worth talking about. So I'm going to bring it up now because
It has a plot.
there is a plot, and
It's wafer thin.
rather thin. I'm just going to see if it's okay. Here we go. Just bring it up on IMDb right now. I'm trying to find the storyline. Here we go. Adam Clay is a beekeeper, but someone very important to him is scammed and driven to harm. However, what these power and money hungry scammers don't know is that Clay is an agent in a classified program called Beekeepers, and they underestimate how much of a threat he is. It's written by a 6-year-old. Adam sets out on a quest of vengeance where he hunts and kills those responsible for the incident. Boy, does it go up the chain as well.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he also a literal beekeeper in it as well?
He is a literal beekeeper, and he's in a government organization called the Beekeepers.
No,
What are
he's
the chances?
retired.
Retired, he was in it.
So he's a beekeeper who retired to become a beekeeper. So he never really retired, did he? He never got out.
When he's a beekeeper for the government, he's not an actual beekeeper. That's the phrase, that's the title they give this Jason Bourne-esque person who's there to be like.
But doesn't he actually keep bees in it? I'm sure I saw something
So
with him.
in the
Oh, yeah,
film,
he does,
yes,
yeah.
but in the film, he's already retired.
He retires from becoming a beekeeper. So the beekeepers are a government organization that do like wet work, that kind of thing. Okay. So they go out
Then
and
he
they.
retires to, and he
And becomes
actually becomes
a
an actual
literal
beekeeper.
beekeeper. That's exactly what happens. Anyway, as bad luck would have it, the person that he's staying with, who he's renting land off of so he can keep bees, she falls for a scam, which loses the millions of dollars that she's raised for charity for her school that she's a teacher for.
I don't think she's raised it. I think she's like in charge of an account for the school, and that's why she takes it so bad. It's not that it's her money, it's she feels like she's let the school or the charity down because she's lost £2 million of the charity's money.
So, unfortunately, she kills herself.
Oh shit. Okay. That puts a bit of a downer
Shit
on
got
what I
real,
thought
Dan.
was
Shit
like
got real.
quite a like a humorous plot.
So, Jason Statham figures out who is responsible. On like a lower level at first.
Yeah, he
Well,
literally
it's
just turns up
normal
at the
how it
call
works, isn't
center.
it? Yeah.
You can work up the chain.
It's a big chain, is all I'll say. But where it ends up, it's. I don't want to give anything away, but it
Mean,
goes
I
right to
think
the top.
the biggest sort of hint you can give as to how mad it can get, this was meant to be a director video, but because of all of the shenanigans with the strike and stuff, Sky, because it's a Sky film, went, "Whoa, there's a bit of a gap at the cinema for like a stupid action film. Let's just throw it out at the cinema for a bit." So it's got the sort of element of a director TV movie or a director DVD movie where it is just like batshit mental, but they just put it on at the cinema.
My favorite character in it is Jeremy Irons' character, who,
Mr. Exposition.
yeah.
Oh, so he's not the big villain then.
No. He's the guy that goes, "You don't know who you're messing with. These are the beekeepers. Do you know what they do?"
And he makes lots of bee puns about the hive and stuff like that.
Yeah. And he's like, "You guys are all ex like special forces from around the world. Do you know what the beekeepers call you? Pussies." And stuff like that. And like, it's clear that someone's gone, he's gone, "I don't really know what my direction is." And someone's gone to him, "I don't know. Watch that bit in John Wick where the guy's explaining who John Wick is." And he goes, "And just do that for the whole fucking film." Like the whole film, just that 5 minute scene, which is amazing in John Wick, by the way. It's one of my favorite bits. He's chewing the scenery, takes a drag from a cigarette, holds it in for at least 10 seconds before he goes, "John Wick, Baba Yaga," and then just goes on about like that. This is Jeremy Irons going, "You don't know who you're messing with," throughout the whole film. He's telling everyone, "You don't know who you're messing with. It's the beekeepers. You're in real trouble now. This is one of the best, calls you guys pussies," all that throughout the whole film. That's all he pretty much does. And his job is security in this as well. And it's like,
The head of security for the guy who's scamming people.
yeah. Who I don't want to say who he is.
No,
Because
we can't
it's
spoil that.
no, it's
But all we
fucking
could say is that it
ridiculous.
is just, he turns up at the call center where literally the woman, they do the thing where like it pops up that you've got a virus and you call this number and that you give them access to your laptop and then they just drain everything. He literally turns up there with two cans of petrol and just walks along pouring petrol over these computers and basically says, "Get out," and then just sets the place on fire. It's brilliant.
So we are taking the piss. I will say this though, I really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought it was a fun action film. I love Jason Statham. I'm kind of in the Mark Kermode camp of like, he's one of the better action heroes in the world at the moment.
So it's very much kind of like a Ron Seal, does what it says in the tin.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh yeah, like
I
this
think
is.
Jason Statham knows what he can do. He does attempt an accent in this film, which disappears quite quickly. For the first 20 minutes, maybe he has an accent, and then it just
What
disappears.
kind of accent?
Just like generic
Yes.
American.
You've got a crazy South African guy in this as well.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He's one of the better like characters. You've got other beekeepers. It's just kind
It's
of
just
crazy.
balls to the wall, stupid action, but it's just enjoyable.
You've got a detective that seems to get a promotion every 5 minutes.
Why? Because it's like his superiors keep dying or something, and just keeps getting
You know,
shifted up the chain.
because you need some kind of like stability in this film of like characters that you still recognize other than the Jeremy Irons telling everyone how fucked they are. Like it's so you got this, oh, and the character, by the way, that's in charge of this, in charge of the operation, is the daughter of the person that killed herself. So, you know, on the
Yeah,
plus
she's
side,
the detective on the case.
yeah, she's not too close to it at all.
Okay.
It's just great. It's so stupid. He knows exactly what he can do. Like the action set pieces are all great. He always finds something amusing to kill someone with in a film as well.
There's one bit where he wants to get into a building and they know he's coming, so they completely secure up the building. Like, there's no way he gets in. And he literally just walks up to the security at the front door and goes, "I'm going in now," basically. Beats the shit out of him and walks in. He doesn't try and sneak in or anything. Great.
Yeah, it's there's not much in the way of subtlety in this film, but yeah, you know, if you want to watch it, it's all on Sky now as well.
Yeah, it
So,
is on Sky Movies. And we didn't
oh,
say
cool,
Poor Things is obviously on Disney Plus as
yeah,
well.
both well worth a watch. Next up is probably Holdovers, right? Can I talk about that
For you, it
briefly?
is, mate.
Really liked it. It's a great film. So the story is, God, what's the director's name? Who directed this? I can't remember. Give me a second. I
This
will
is
look
the
this
Paul
up.
Giamatti film, right?
Yeah, the Paul Giamatti film, yeah, where he's was nominated for a ton of awards for. Story is Paul Giamatti is a teacher at a private school who has never moved on from this private school. He kind of is happy where he should be. He thinks all his students should be better. He never gives out good grades. And he's kind of scammed into being the teacher that has to stay with the kids at this boarding school over Christmas. Something happens, which means most of them get away, except for this one that he doesn't really like very much. And as a result, he starts forming this relationship with him and one of the people that's still there to serve food, who's got her own reasons for why she's quite happy to stay there. She ended up winning an award, and rightly fucking so. She's incredible in this film. Paul Giamatti's excellent as well. I can't remember the other guy's name, but he's literally only just turned 18, the main actor in it. Dominic Sessa. Sessa? Whatever. He's really good in it. The whole film looks like an early 80s film. And you know how we're talking about how Poor Things looks like a 30s film? I mean, this film was shot in a way that makes it look grainy, makes it look like an early 80s film. The music, the way it's laid out. This film is excellent. Really, really good. It's probably up there as one of my favorite films of the year as well.
What kind of 80s film? Like what?
Commando.
Just like Commando, yeah. But it's like, it's got the kind of like grainy aesthetic of like Trading Places or something like that.
All right, yeah.
Nothing like Trading Places, but it's that kind of aesthetic anyway. Yeah. I would say this should be hitting streaming services fairly soon, and in which case I would definitely watch it. It's funny. Paul Giamatti is an absolute bell end in it, but he is not without sympathy. And yeah, Divine Joy Randolph is like the probably the shining star in this film. She's exceptional.
She won the Oscar, right?
Yeah, deservedly so. Absolutely deservedly so. But I don't want to talk about it too much because you guys haven't seen it, but I just thought I'd mention it because it is really, really good. Well worth a watch.
Cool.
And
which is what I assume is everyone's film of the year so far.
Hang on.
Madame Web.
Steve's coming in, so I think we should explain Madame Web to Steve now as he comes in with a very interesting name.
But apparently he's going to stay on mute and with no camera.
Here he is. Hey, Steve.
Yo, hello.
I think the only film we talked about so far that you've watched is The Beekeeper. Thoughts on that?
Okay. Yeah, it's good.
There we go. I'm solved.
Thanks for your insight, Steve. Let's move on.
Right, thanks for joining us, Steve. I'll see you later. Yeah, it's good.
That should go on the box up.
No, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, I did as well, yeah.
I think it was one of his finer roles in recent years, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think as well, for me, I didn't really know what to kind of expect. I didn't really have much expectation, to be fair. I think that it followed the formula that most Jason Statham films follow.
Yes,
over the top. Funny accent. Okay, I don't know if you discussed it, but how his American accent drifted off in the first 15 minutes of the film. Overall, I thought it was good. I enjoyed all the little B references and the, you know, the little quotations and the analogies they used. I thought that was really, really good. I haven't actually watched it since, but it's definitely one of those sort of films that I will definitely watch again in the next month or so. Very, very good. Just to give you a brief overview.
Yeah. We're on to Madame Web now.
Okay, I haven't seen this, so
you're the better one off of us from that.
Yeah, congrats. I'm jealous. You know when you're like, you're jealous people get to watch something for the first time?
Yeah.
I'm jealous that you get the opportunity to not go watch it. So it's...
Well, you say that. Like, yeah. It was like a good watch in the bad sort of way.
Yeah. I will watch it.
The storyline, according to IMDb, in a switch from the typical genre, Madame Web tells the standalone origin story of one of Marvel Publishing's most enigmatic heroines. The suspense-driven thriller stars Dakota Johnson as Cassandra Webb, a paramedic in Manhattan who develops the power to see the future and realizes she can use this insight to change it. Forced to confront revelations about her past, she forges a relationship with three young women bound for powerful destinies, if they can all survive a deadly present.
I'm just reminded of a meme that came out when the film came out. So maybe we should do it with Steve, ask him to guess. So it's like there's like a list of events of Madame Web. So I'll list off the webs, and you've got to list off the things that happen. You've got to guess which one is the lie. So number one, Madame Web is born in a cave in Peru with the help of magical spider people. The second one is three spider women never get powers and are only seen in costume during dream sequences. An evil Spider-Man is killed by a large Pepsi sign. Madam Web becomes wanted for kidnapping by the NYPD. Madam Web runs down evil Spider-Man in her car twice. Peter Parker is born but not named. And Madam Web inexplicably spits into three ghost-like copies of herself near the end of the movie.
So one of them's a lie.
Which one of them's a lie?
I feel like Born in the Cave is probably true. I think, based on comments I've had with Terry, he said that there was a baby or someone was pregnant and he assumed it's Peter Parker. So I'm going to guess that him being born and named is probably true. I'm going to go for the Pepsi sign one.
It's a trick question. None of them are lies. They all happen in the film. Yes. Every single one.
Bonkers. This movie is fucking insane. So my favorite thing, so I've been trying to find this on IMDb, the quote, and it's the obvious quote that everyone is now quoting from.
I found this quote as well, Dan.
Go on, go for it. You go for it.
Yeah, so we all know the great Spider-Man quote, yeah, which of course is, when you take on responsibility, great power will come.
That's not even the one I was thinking of.
That's basically that's like if Master Yoda tried to impart Uncle Ben's wisdom.
Julia Carpenter checks a photo of man. So who is he? That man is Ezekiel Sims. He was in the Amazon with my mum when she was researching spiders right before she died.
That's the one that that they quoted at the Oscars, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Oh, this film's shit. It's fucking awful. It is.
Are we going into spoiler territory for this one?
Steve, how much do you want? We're not going to spoilers if you want to go in fresh on this one.
The only one I don't really want you to spoil for me is June 2.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Okay. So yeah, feel free to, but I'm not being funny or anything, based on the other films in the Spider Cinema, whatever it's called, I can't imagine this film being, I think there's only one good film out of all the films so far, so like, obviously, yeah, you know. So yeah, so feel free to spoil away. I'll watch it, but I'll probably forget half the stuff you said anyway, and so yeah.
Well, for me, my favourite scene and the funniest thing of a film ever is, as is mentioned, Peter Parker is born but not named, and Ben Parker is in it, and he says to her, like, oh, it's so great having a kid but not having all the responsibilities. And she laughs to herself and says, like, oh, yeah, you think that now? So she basically laughs about the fact that she knows that the parents of that kid are going to die and he's going to be left with the responsibility of raising that child.
Yeah, because that's basically her power, is to see into the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and it's just like, what a twat.
If you've seen the trailer, you've seen every scene with them dressed in their suits.
Yeah.
It is.
Is there a really sort of like shitty, quirky post credit where they hint at yet another member of the Sony universe?
No, they cut the post credit scene.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Yeah.
They wanted this over as quickly as they possibly could. Yeah, if they could not roll credits at all, I think they would have. I think they'd have just been like, right, we're gone now. Every actor from this film has shat on it since being in it.
Yeah, I've probably seen a couple of interviews.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, they are, it's not even like pretending. They are openly shitting on this film. Like, it's crazy.
It's because they're all probably pissed off because they thought, I was going to be in a Marvel film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dakota Johnson changed agents, didn't she, after this?
She really did.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Apparently, Sony are really not happy with her as well because she is shat on it from a great height. Sydney Sweeney just made a couple of jokes on Saturday Night Live, but Dakota Johnson has literally given interviews where she said, yeah, it was shit, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is so why we're not going to get a second one then.
I mean, you never know with Sony, but
you've got to think though, this at this sort of point in time, that someone like Disney / Marvel Studio, you've got to be thinking to yourself, it might be a good time now to start putting an offer for the rights to Spider-Man completely. I know that obviously it's a massive moneymaker, but Sony have not got it right at all for a long, long time. So it would be interesting to sort of see, if, say, for example, you're in charge of the you know, the rights for Spider-Man, now would probably be the time to negotiate some, you know, I know obviously they've got their deal with Sony regarding Spider-Man appearing in the MCU, but now might be the right time for Disney to swoop in and sort of say, Joe, we'll give you some money. We'll give you X amount of billion. It's probably more money than the next 10 films are going to make. You know, that's it. That's just what I think. I don't know if you guys agree, but now it's just, Sony just don't seem to, you know, you take away the first Venom film, which was good, not best. There's been nothing good in that universe for me for a long, long time. And it's just a real shame when you've got, you know, I'm not going to give it any sort of props here, but Morbius, if that was in the MCU, that would have been a completely different film.
They wouldn't have been. That's the main difference.
Well, but even if they did, it would still have been better than what we got. You know,
no, I think, said when we went to see Madame Web, it's the weirdest film because when they announced it, everyone went, who? Then we saw trailers and we're like, that looks shit. Then it came out, we're like, wow, that was shit. And at no point was there ever any excitement. And I was saying, I don't know if Sony have the thing where like their rights elapse if they don't make a film within X amount of years, and that's why they're churning out these shit.
I think that is films.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that is the reason why they have to keep putting films out.
I get all they own is Spider-Man, but it's like, surely they could say to Marvel, we're just going to make a Spider-Man who's our own Spider-Man. He's not connected to you. We're just like Miles Morales or whatever. We're going to have our own thing. You can keep Tom Holland. They could make their own Spider-Man film if they wanted to, and there's nothing Marvel could do. But instead, they're making Kraven, they're making Morbius, they're making Madame Web. Supposedly, there's a Rhino film on the way as well. And at one point, there was like some Aunt May film planned that she was going to be like a spy or something stupid like that. Exactly. They're just literally like, what can we make?
It stinks of desperation. It which really like, no one likes. Like,
yeah.
But like Steve said, they'd probably make more money even if they didn't sell it to Disney, if they just stopped making films. Because the main reason they'll never sell him is because Spider-Man makes the most money out of any merchandise
character
is there. So then they might end up selling the film rights, but they'd keep the rights to the figures and stuff. But it is just like...
Do they have merchandising rights as well then?
I think they own everything for Spider-Man,
They wouldn't, because they can't own the comic rights because the comic's still published by Marvel.
No, but yeah, I think they bought it obviously when Marvel was like up the shit, basically, didn't they?
Yeah, desperate. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like Madame Web must have cost a few quid to make.
Yeah.
It's got, and they marketed it as well.
Yeah, they pumped a load of money into it. It's actually got quite a big cast in terms of, I imagine they'd all like, have quite big salaries. It just baffles me. And then when you watch the film, like, there's the stuff we've said now, but like the plot is just ridiculous. And then you've got things where like she does hit Ezekiel Sims with her car, but she jumps over the car that's got the girls in it because she jumps out of a second floor garage in Times Square.
It wasn't even a car. It was like an ambulance that she stole.
Oh, it was an ambulance. You're right. Yeah. It was just... And then the thing of like at the end, she does split into three where she learns to that responsibility brings great power. But it's just like, you're just rushing through. Like that should be something, if you're going to have this, that should be something she learns in the second film. You can't just throw all her powers at her and her understand them all straight away. It's just,
The second film, that's hilarious though, Terry.
Yeah. It's a good old tactic that a lot of films and TV shows use where they throw in something really curveball at the end where they think it's going to drive a demand. Like, if this film was going to be a hit, that could have been the thing where everyone's like, okay, in the next film, we're going to see this, 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 and this. A lot of TV shows and films are very good at doing that. And sometimes, by the sound of it, you get egg on your face because there's clearly not going to be a second one by the sounds of it.
But this film didn't tease anything. Literally, there was no closing credits. It ends with all of them living together as a happy family.
Well, it kind of teases them, doesn't it?
Like the film kind of stuff itself in the teaches them,
That there's some three point Spider-Women
in the future, not like next week.
Yeah.
No, it's like it does seem like kind of weird thing where this is meant to be set before Spider-Man, but we've seen like tons of Spider people already about.
Yeah. I think including the ones running around in the Amazon.
Yeah, and so like there's that bad Spider-Man, and like I think one thing this film missed that I was hoping to see in it was you'd see like James Jonah Jameson like walking across the street and then get hit in the head by that evil Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that'd be like the explanation of why he hates Spider-Man so much when he shows up. That would have been like funny.
Would have been clever though.
That's too nuanced
for Sony.
Yeah. So every time you see any of the girls in this film in their costume, it's a dream sequence.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also that weird thing with the villain where maybe his voice recording was really bad, or he had an accent or something. But they, like, every scene he was in, he was dubbed. So he came across like Matt Berry in Dark Place. Yeah. It just really just seemed it just seemed so out of place with his voice being dubbed over.
Who's the villain in this film?
I couldn't tell you.
I'm
looking at his actual name or the villain's name?
The actor's name, I think, is Taha Rahim.
Taha Rahim.
So maybe they've got someone else to voice his lines. I don't know. But yeah. The film apparently had an $80 million budget.
Just bonkers.
And made $97.5 million at the box office.
But the other ones wanted 60 million, right? All of the marketing and shit.
It wouldn't the marketing. It would have put it well over the $97 million if you include the marketing as well. They never show the marketing budget.
Yeah, the marketing was fucking bonkers for this though.
Yeah, they went heavy with it. So.
And not just that, it was Dakota Johnson saying some weird shit for a lot of it as well.
Yeah.
Fucking weird. Anyway, we've spent longer on Madam Web than we did films we actually liked.
It's easy to talk about films that are crap.
It's always the way. It's like in the old days when we just end up talking about Zack Snyder all the time.
Ah, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a prick. So, what's next?
Iron Claw, which we saw on the same day in a double bill.
Yeah, that seems unfortunate now because Iron Claw is so much better than Madam Web.
At least we saw them in the right order, Madame Web first and then Iron Claw.
If you want to leave on like a high, I'd say leave this film in about halfway through.
We should have done it in the other order.
Can you try not to ruin it? Even though I told you I know the story.
We won't.
Because to be fair, my plan tonight was to actually watch Poor Things. But I forgot we were recording, so I'll touch another time. But yeah, can you try not to ruin this one and Poor Things as well? If you can.
We've done Poor Things.
Yeah,
it's fine. Cool.
The one thing I'll say about this film is it tones down what actually happened in real life.
Yeah,
which mental.
Said something.
Other than that, I think this film's really good. I think Zac Efron is unfortunate to not at least be nominated for an award.
He should have been nominated. It's an absolute travesty. He didn't even get nominated.
Yeah. Him and the bear should have been nominated.
His performance was really understated in it, I think. And that was what made it so good.
He was really understated while looking like He-Man.
He was massive. He was built like a bear or like a gorilla. He was just huge.
Yeah. Not like the guy who plays the bear in The Bear. He was built also
incredibly cut. He just couldn't match Efron for size. No. Efron was physically massive and cut.
Yeah.
The guy who plays the dad is perfect casting, I thought.
Yeah. He's played that sort of character quite a lot, though, isn't he? Like the sort of gruff American everyman type, but also a bit of a cunt. Mm.
Yeah. And he's also in Mindhunter as well, which is fucking great. So.
Yes.
I don't want to give too much away. It's just it's genuinely really good. It's not the cheeriest of films.
Heartbreaking film.
Yeah.
And like Zac Efron's really this guy who just really loves his brothers. Yeah. And
there's this on if you go on like Instagram or you TikTok or YouTube, I mean, if you go to like the real section, the shorts, it's all about the Von Erichs since the film came out.
Yeah.
And I watched this video of video of Hulk Hogan was on a plane with one of the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
And he was talking about what's happened to his brothers and they were coming back from Japan. They'd just done a tour over there, wrestling. And he said that, I'm not going to follow the same. I've got a daughter to live for. Then 3 days later, when he shot himself in the chest. Like, it just goes to show you, like...
Steve, you asked us not to spoil it, then your throat's spoiled out.
Like I said to you before, I know the story of the Von Erichs, being a big wrestling fan growing up, and it's just such a if you want so much heartbreak and bad luck on one family, that's the family you think of. You know what I mean? Like, it's just such a, and I'm very, I kind of feel like I've also put myself off from watching the film because I think if it's going to go how I think it's going to, I feel like I'm going to cry. I feel like I'm going to, I don't know. Like, I just, it's one of those things. I will definitely 100% watch probably the next month or so, but like, it's, when you hear films based on true events, if you know a lot about the true story, it kind of puts you off certain things. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what I feel about this film. Like, I know how it's probably going to end, how the story is going to go, and I'm don't know if I'm mentally prepared to watch it, because I've seen so many documentaries and stuff about family and stuff. Mm. It's just, the story is literally just heart-wrenching. If 10% of that happened to any of our families, some people wouldn't be able to cope. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like,
yeah.
And it's horrible. Like, you know, it's, but it's nice that they could have made a film about any famous wrestling family. I think they chose it personally. But looking at the photos and the trailers, and that, it sounds like everyone was cast perfectly, which again then reels me back into them when I say, actually, yeah, I want to sit and watch this film.
Yeah.
With quite a lot of urgency. I don't know if it's still at the cinema, but okay.
Well, it's worth a watch, Steve. Seriously, it's really, really good. And yeah, Zac Efron's really, really good in it. Like, you feel for him throughout the whole film.
Mm.
Mm.
He just, as you said, Dan, he just loves his brothers. That's all it is.
Mm.
He's just doing his best while also trying to look after himself as well. So, yeah, really fucking good. What's next?
On my list, it's All of Us Strangers.
Okay. I really want to spoil this one because I've got a lot to talk about, but we won't. It's fine. I've got a theory, that's all.
So this drops on Disney Plus in 3 days.
Does it really?
It does.
I really love this film. This is, along with a film we haven't mentioned yet, this is probably tied for my film of the year.
The more I think about it, the more I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah.
Just, and I've got theories as well, so I can't wait to watch it again if those theories are actually true, or if I'm overthinking it now.
Steve's had enough, he's off.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know whether can you just give us a sign if you can hear us, Steve, because I will quickly whiz through some of them. No,
he's gone.
Okay. My first theory is that he's dead already, like from the start of the film.
I don't think he's dead already.
No.
I think he's alive for part of it.
I reckon
I think the meeting that they first have, where I can't remember the character, but Paul Mescal's character turns up drunk on his doorstep. I think that is like the sliding doors moment, shall we say.
Yeah. I think they both die in like a fire or something like that.
Burn that building.
Yeah. So, and my theories back this up, that he then sees dead people. But spoilers, by the way, good God, at this point, if you're listening to this,
he sees dead people is not a spoiler, though, because that's like, you know, that he goes and sees his parents.
Okay, yeah. So
do we do the plot summary first?
Yeah, okay, plot summary. Shall I find it? I'll find the IMDb one again, because, I mean, it's consistent, and Madam Web was close to, I suppose, what actually happens in that film. But yeah, here we go. So, storyline. One night in his near-empty tower block in contemporary London, Adam, played by Andrew Scott, has a chance encounter with a mysterious neighbour, Harry, played by Paul Mescal, which punctures the rhythm of his everyday life. As a relationship develops between them, Adam is preoccupied with memories of the past and finds himself drawn back to the suburban town where he grew up and the childhood home where his parents, who are played by Claire Foy and Jamie Bell, appear to be living, just as they were on the day he died 30 years before.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to go spoilers on this one, I think, if that's all right with it.
I mean, we already have.
Yeah. So I think he dies, Harry dies, and that's as a result they can kind of hang out with dead people. That's what the rules seem to be. So he goes back, sees his parents who are dead. When they go to the nightclub, this is why I think this is the case. They go to a nightclub. They've already mentioned how many people died of AIDS in the 80s. And the nightclub's full of people that have died because it's a gay club. And it as a result, be. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel because the thing that kept coming back to was like, how was he, like, when he was seeing his parents, he was like in the house and he was doing that. So it was like, was that all in his head or? Yeah. As we mentioned, was that because he's in some sort of netherworld? Because the way the film literally ends as well is almost like it's moving on, so to speak.
Yeah.
We're getting very spoiler heavy, FYI, Steve, on All of Us Strangers.
Oh, okay, I'm not too worried about this one.
Okay.
I will watch it, but yes, crack on. Sorry, a bit of a leakage in the bathroom. Sorry.
you've got the shits.
No, definitely we've got a leak in our sink, so that's how it's going. Manly and, you know, go diagnose the leak. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it's a leak.
Yeah. That looks like a leak. Something is definitely leaking.
I mean, yeah, it definitely makes sense that they might both be dead.
Yeah.
And it could have been like in a fire in that tower block. Because
there
was a bit.
There is a bit. Do I remember there's a bit where like he's in his flat and there's like blue flashing lights coming through?
Because like right at the start, there's a bit of the with the smoke alarm,
exactly.
Or fire alarm goes off. And like there's no one in that apartment building except those two, which is just really weird. Like it's London.
Yeah.
Like why is there no one, like why is there no tenants there?
Yeah. Yes, but like I said at the time, I thought it was my horror brain overthinking things. So I was just like, oh yeah, that seems like that would happen. But then I was like, no, this is just like a drama. It's not going to be like that. But then it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the kind of premise has him, you know, meeting with his parents, you know, again and seeing them. So it's that, you know, it does have that potential spiritual
influence.
And also
influence. When, because he's like writing a book or a screenplay or something, isn't he, about his childhood or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like books by a Japanese writer called Haruki Murakami.
Hmm.
I think this is based on a Japanese thing.
I think it is.
I think it's based on a Japanese novel. It's a different novelist. So I've not read the book this is based on, but it still kind of reminds me of some of the books he's done, like 1Q84 and Kafka on a Shore, which involves like 1Q84 involves like two people who are kind of soulmates from children, basically somehow end up in a kind of alternate version of our world, which basically for all intents and purposes looks almost exactly the same, except it's got an extra moon. And kind of weirdness ensues, you know. And it just kind of reminds me of those kind of novels with where everything's kind of normal, but also not, if you know what I mean. Mm. Like it takes place in very kind of normal suburban settings that the film does, doesn't it? And it's, you know, very kind of normal slice of life, but then it's got that otherworldliness and to it, which is really good.
Yeah.
I quite liked how it wasn't like rose tinted with his parents. He sort of like comes out to his mum, and although she doesn't like throw her toys out the pram and be like, oh no, no son of mine, she's like very like, oh. Whereas like with it being in his head, at the very least it's in his head, if it's not him meeting them as ghosts. That could have been a bit more like, oh no, it's okay. But there was actually sort of a clash, so to speak, of them talking about it and her like asking about it. I thought that was quite interestingly done.
Yeah. I think both his parents' reactions to like when he comes out to them was pretty interesting, because they're both from a particular era where it was less kind of people were less out about it.
Mm.
And like, yeah, his mum had a kind of reaction where she wasn't quite keen, I guess, because she was hoping to get grandchildren, whatever. And then his dad was like, oh yeah, I kind of always knew. But then there's that moment where he says to his dad, where his dad said he always heard him crying in his room after getting bullied at school. And he's just like, well, if you heard me crying, why don't you come in and like comfort me or anything?
Yeah.
And there's that kind of like horrible admission his dad has to kind of make about it. And yeah, it was just very emotional.
Yeah. It's loosely adapted from a novel called The Strangers by Taichi Yamada.
Yeah.
So yeah, apparently. And the house used in it is the director's actual childhood home when he goes back to it. So, like keeps it super personal.
Well, no, we haven't mentioned it, but I thought everyone in it was fantastic. All four of, like, the main characters.
Yeah.
There's not really anyone else in it, is it? There's, like, subsidiary characters, but that's only really them four. But they're all fantastic in it.
Yeah, they're all excellent, yeah. Andrew Scott's something else, I think. He is really, really good. And Paul Mescal as well is really good in it, so yeah. Yeah, really, really big fan of this film.
Very, very right up there for me for this year.
Yeah.
Like I said, can't wait to watch it again when it drops on Disney Plus.
Yeah, same, definitely. Well, I can. It's really sad, but it's I'll watch it still, I think. Next up,
the next one I've got on my list, so Steve gets to pipe up, is Wicked Little Letters.
I didn't watch this one.
Oh, this one was great. This actually, again, another one of those sort of ones where I didn't know what to expect and actually came out extremely pleasantly surprised. Like, Olivia Colman, I know I've said this to the pod before, but Olivia Colman is fantastic.
Yeah.
She really is that kind of like chameleon who can pretty much do whatever kind of role you give. I don't think there's much I've seen her in that I've not thought to myself, she's, but I think me and Terry both kind of agreed when we came out that the twist, if you like, was very, very predictable. Mm. But it still didn't ruin. You watch films called you, that's definitely the twist. It kind of ruins your.
It wasn't a twist, though, was it? They didn't.
Yeah, that, no, it wasn't. But the
twist is revealed quite early on as well. So it's
not yeah. Big... Yeah, but like, you still kind of feel like sometimes you watch a film and stuff that happens, you're very much like, well, that's kind of like it ruins sort of that, your opinion on it. But this was just. In those sort of films, just got better and better as the film got on. Yeah. And the last line in the film. What she says to her dad is absolutely fantastic, and it was just, yeah, I definitely can't wait to see it again. I can't really fault it to a certain point. I think everyone in the film had their place, and the fact it's based on a true story as well, or loosely based on true events.
Yeah, the letters were really sent, and it was like a national disgrace, so to speak.
Yeah, like you know, a lot of humour to it, like, as well as a couple of sort of, like, there wasn't there was any heartbreaking moments. I can't remember the name of the Irish lady was in. I can't remember her
Jessie
name.
Buckley.
Yeah, she was fantastic in it as well. Like, she, if anything, she's all went through the real emotional rollercoaster as the film went on. But, yeah, it was very, very good. And, yeah, I definitely can't wait to see it again.
So what was the film about?
So the premise of the film is it's set in like 1916 or something, just after the First World War in Littlehampton. And the film starts with the 19th letter being received. But basically, Olivia Colman's character, Edie, is getting obscene letters, which for the time, they're very obscene.
Yeah.
So it's like she sucks 10 cocks a week minimum. And it's like, like the father is just like utterly outraged, and he's marching to the police. What are you going to do about this? This is like, and they feel like they know that it's the Irish lady who lives next door, played by Jessie Buckley, who obviously swears like a trooper because she's Irish. And that is like literally the only evidence against it. But you sort of explore through the film, you explore like that actually they got on quite well up until a point. Her dad, Edie's dad, is one of those like, very controlling, horrible dad, played by Timothy Spall, who I know he's been thin for a while, but he's still very odd to look at as a thin man.
Yeah, he is.
You just think of him as like Alfreda St. Pet and stuff, where he's got a bit of timber on. But again, he's really good in it, and it's just like the ineptitude of the police, which I feel like is lent on as a comedy thing. But it literally, like, hundreds of letters were sent, and it became like an actual national tabloid scandal of like who is sending these letters, the culprit must be found, like it's bringing the country into disrepute, so to speak.
Yeah.
So they like they hand delivered like which the person posting from their books, or they sending it by post.
Yeah, all stamped and addressed.
So couldn't they kind of tell like, where they were coming from, like in terms of
like, Hampton.
Yeah, because you kind of
just going to Edie.
Yeah,
and then they get the police to take the Irish lady to court, and she ends up in prison. She gets bailed out, and when she comes out, the letters start again.
So it is definitely her then.
But then, after a while, the letters start just going all over the place, and everyone's getting them. And it just escalates. But it's very funny, as Steve said. Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley are great. Timothy Spall's great. It's just... And I don't know who played the hapless policeman, but the hapless policeman's great. But it's just like, what, you know, like when you think of like a really good like British film, like Four Weddings and a Funeral, it's not groundbreaking. It's not, but it's just a really nice, interesting watch. It'll be one you'll be able to rewatch quite happily.
Yeah. It's only like an hour and a half as well. It was like a long film. It was one of those quite easy sort of films you could watch, I'd say.
Nice. Yeah, if you don't like foul language, it's not for you.
Yeah,
fair enough. I quite like it, so I'll be right then.
Yeah, especially that last line as well.
Yeah,
You know, someone in the film drops the C bomb.
Hey,
yeah,
because
like they go to read the letters out in court, and the judge is like, "Do we really need to read these out?" It's like, "Well, yeah, we did."
Yeah,
it's like the end of The Hangover where they show the pictures from their night. What's next?
For me, it's the one that Steve does not want us to talk about, the epic epic Arrakis battle. June 2.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's so good. It's we won't no spoilers.
No spoilers. All you can say is that it's fucking phenomenal.
There is not a great deal you can spoil with this film anyway, I don't think.
Have you read the books or have you read the book, Steve, or do you know anything about the plot?
No. Like I said, I've seen an older version of it.
The David Lynch one.
Yeah, David Lynch one. Yeah, that's as far as
David
my...
David Lynch one that is shorter than either part one or part two of the
film. Yeah.
It really frustrates me because at a certain point last year, I worked at a certain sort of entertainment outlet, should we say. And so many times I saw the first one on Blu-ray for offer for $2.99, $3.99, $4.99. I thought, I need to buy it. I need to buy it. I never did. I went to the same place yesterday and it was $7.99. I was like, nah, I'm not paying that.
It's on Netflix.
Nah, fuck him, don't get money.
Especially when you used to get X amount of discount. Do you know what I mean? you know, but yeah, I will. My plan in the next 2 weeks is to watch the first and the second one, so I can actually have actual proper conversations about it. Like, you know,
I was very disappointed that Cineworld or any other cinema haven't seemed to have done a double bill.
Yeah, you'd have thought that would be a no-brainer, right?
Mm. Yeah, I think somewhere
it would be
5 hours
long.
Mm.
But
storyline then. Paul Atreides unites with Chani and the Fremen while on a warpath of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love and his life of fate in the known universe, he endeavors to prevent a terrible future who only he can foresee. It's so, like, if you just read that and you didn't know anything about Dune, you wouldn't have a clue about how great this film is and how great the first one is as
I
well.
I think you need to use Josh Brolin's hypnosis.
Hmm.
That's in that thing.
It's so good.
Willy
so
Wonka
funny.
Bangs the girl from Spider-Man.
I've seen that video, yeah.
He's it's so funny. He's kind of come into his own during this press tour.
Yeah. He's of an age now anyway. He knows that he's not going to really get into shit from it from the studios. To just have fun.
There's an air of Jeff Bridges about him now.
Yes.
Like, yeah. What's the other one?
He's come a long way since the Goonies, hasn't he?
Anton Chigurh and what's his face from No Country for Old Men still don't like each other very much.
but you know, this film was just
beautiful.
Everything about it. It looks spectacular. It sounds spectacular. It's the first time I've seen a film in IMAX for a long time where I've actually been like, wow, this was worth
it.
Me
it
and
has
Ugan
to be seen
spoke
in IMAX,
after was like, there's a particular scene where he does something that makes him a Fremen and just the sound and the everything that's happening. The guy in front of me literally put a thumbs up. He literally just sat there and went, thumbs up. He was talking to himself throughout the film, I'd like to stress, and he got a lunchbox out at one point.
Oh, good God.
luckily, there were no pistachios or apples.
Fucking hell, yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it just looked like the sandworms moving through were just spectacular looking.
What I like about this is that not only, so for starters, Denis Villeneuve can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. He is an exceptional director.
He really, really is.
And one of the things he does is he comes into this and there's no sense of irony. There's no sense that he's going to take the piss out of the source material. He comes in and he takes it seriously. He takes some pretty dumb shit seriously in this. And as a result, it rubs off on the cast who all take it seriously. Everyone puts in an award-winning turn, I think. Everyone's really, really good in this.
Apart from one person, maybe.
Javier Bardem.
No. Javier Bardem's bloody amazing in
this. I was about to say, it's still guy. Yeah, he's really, really good in it, yeah.
So were you saying it's not great then, Dan?
I didn't really... Once I heard people pointing it out, it kind of made sense to me. It is Christopher Walken is... Just
I thought he worked quite well.
He just feels miscast because everyone else in the film is their characters. You know, Javier Bardem is Stilgar. Like, the main guy, he's Paul Atreides. Everyone is their character. But Christopher Walken is Christopher Walken in this, and he's supposed to be like, you know, a very important person. It just like, there's nothing wrong with his performance, you know, but like, he just didn't really.
He does look like he stumbled onto set and no one had the heart to tell him to go.
Yeah, yeah, like he asked to be in the film, but no, they couldn't say no.
Yeah, he's already here. He's quite old.
He just turned up. Yeah. And went, I'm the Emperor, right? And then you're just like, it's fucking Christopher Walken. I can't tell him no.
What am I supposed to do? I'm the Emperor, right?
Not bad, but it just wasn't like, it was probably, you know, a bit. It could have been better casting, maybe.
Austin Butler steals the show for me in this as well.
He is great.
Austin Butler is fantastic. The whole kind of the way the Harkonnens are portrayed in this, they're just absolutely menacing and
all
evil.
The stuff on their home planet just looks phenomenal.
It's amazing. They're very unique style of like fireworks, kind of.
Yeah.
just great to see. And yeah, it's the whole, yeah, the whole color grading, cinematography, and the look of it was just very oppressive and stark and horrible.
Obviously,
Harkonnen world.
We've got to go into some spoilers. I can't believe he fucks the sandworm and then looks to the cinema and goes, and now fuck your popcorn bucket, everyone.
Yeah, you thought they would have cut that scene after they stopped distributing the popcorn bucket.
Yeah, it kind of spoiled it because we didn't have a popcorn bucket. I just had to make do with a cup.
That reminds me of this this thing I've seen on Twitter recently.
Yeah.
That's a bit off topic, I'm going. But it's apparently like Star Wars films in Chile, mm-hmm. when they were shown on TV in Chile, because they didn't want to
cut. Oh, it's amazing.
Out.
Yeah, this is incredible.
I don't know if it's true? Yes. Or did someone make this up where they don't want to cut to adverts, so they just found ways to kind of put the adverts in the film itself. So when like Obi-Wan Kenobi goes to give Luke Skywalker his like lightsaber, he opens up the chest where the lightsaber is, but then like you just see it cuts to like this other person picking up like a, well, it looks like Ben Kenobi, but like they're picking up like a beer with like this special beer brand, and it's like, it's a visa.
Brilliant.
It's so good.
There's so many scenes like that in that I just keep seeing it on. And that's what made me think of.
That would have been great, wouldn't it? If like you looked at Shai Hulud and there was just like an Audi logo,
yeah,
like on the top of it. Dune 2, probably my film of the year. To be honest, isn't it? Like, it is.
It's up there with Poor Things for me.
Yeah, beats out Madam.
Was it too late for the Oscars? I'm assuming
it would be up
for Oscars next year.
It fucking needs to be.
But surely it'll be up. For, I know, like, they hate sci-fi films and stuff like that.
But like Terry's saying, like everything about it, like not just cinematography, like the sound, the music, the soundtrack, and like just the sound design as well,
and the acting performances,
and the acting,
I'm not sure any of them were from my perspective. I don't think any of them were good enough to get into Oscars though, because I feel like, obviously, it's not really something to talk about here because we're not talking about last year's films, but. Oppenheimer,
mm-hmm.
none of us were overly impressed by Oppenheimer. I didn't think it was dreadful, but it didn't make any of our top 10s last year. It won Oscar's best film. It won best actor, best supporting actor.
Yeah, apparently we didn't see the free blowjob edition that every other fucker seemed to go see.
But I just feel like, I feel like that's the Academy, and it's like they like a film where there's real people. And I think from like the fuddy-duddy old people Academy, they're looking at Oppenheimer. It made $1 billion. It's 3 hours long. It's not about special effects. It's not about superheroes. I feel like they jumped on that in an almost anti... Because the year before, obviously, Everything Everywhere won everything.
Yeah.
And they ticked off all their boxes. Oh, we've given it to a Chinese person. It's an international film. It's got lots of foreign languages in it. I feel like this year, it was like back to normal. Like, oh, yeah, no, it's about white people. It's about something real that happened. It's like, I'm not taking it. Although I wasn't overly keen on the film, Cillian Murphy was fantastic in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like Dune, I don't think that's going to get much Academy love acting wise.
No, but I feel like Oppenheimer was very much like a Oscar bait type movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't want to put him down too much, but it just feels like Christopher Nolan tried to make like an Oscar bait movie. I don't know.
Say what I said to you guys. I think Denis Villeneuve is who people think Christopher Nolan actually is.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to kind of...
Yeah, I can't think of a bad film Denis Villeneuve has made, and he's made some bold films, and like, obviously making like the sequel to Blade Runner, making June, and not only making June, but making June 1, part 1, when June part 2 wasn't greenlit.
He and had calling it part 1 as well.
Yeah, he had enough confidence in himself and like his filmmaking ability that this will get made. And even this film, it doesn't end like in a neat little bow. It leaves it open to the next one, which you imagine is going to get made based on how much money it's made.
It's been greenlit already.
And apparently, it's like this, like Denis Villeneuve has been working on this since like he was much younger, like in the 80s.
He's
like,
been
like
he was like for years and
writing
years.
It and storyboarding it like for years. It's like it's kind of been a passion project for him. So,
because I saw a thing from him as well, and he said, like, when I make a film, I make it with one particular audience member in mind, and that person is me. So, which
enough.
I think is a good
mindset
great
taste.
To have. Yeah,
I'd watch a film with him. That sounds pretty good.
If you think of everything else, you'd say that Blade Runner, Prisoners, which is fucking horrific but gripping. Arrival is a fantastic film.
Yeah, Arrival's.
That was very underrated and didn't get as much love as it should have done, but that film was phenomenal.
Yeah, Blade Runner as well. Yeah, go see both of them, Steve, if you get a chance.
Yeah, I'll trust my aim.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the second one would be in the cinema for quite a while, so.
I would have thought so.
Yeah. I think it's doing quite well, isn't it? So.
You said the first one's on Netflix. I can watch that when I'm working from home or something.
I think it's come off Netflix now.
No, it's still on. It might have come off US Netflix. It's still on UK Netflix.
Okay, cool. That's right. Yeah, watch it on Netflix then.
Yeah. Perfect.
June 2, what's next?
Next is another film that will probably be challenging our top 10s when we come to the end of the year. Imaginary.
God.
So this was the last film we all, the first film we've seen for a long time where it was all four of us.
Yeah.
And
admittedly,
it was
I only saw like 9/10 of it, but yeah.
Oh yeah, you turned up well late, didn't you?
Oh, you missed it. You missed so much, Dan.
Did I?
You missed the very
you lost
vital
all
prologue.
Context.
Is that why I thought this film was a big old pile of shite?
Yeah. If you'd seen the first 5 minutes, you'd think it's an amazing film.
Oh, okay.
It just changes the whole perspective on the whole thing.
Now I feel bad that I missed it. Okay, so I've been looking at the IMDb storylines. June 2's one was 4 lines, and I thought that was small. And it was 4 lines just because it doesn't want to give anything away. This one's 2 lines. A woman returns to her childhood home to discover the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him. So he managed to fit a fucking spoiler in that 2 lines.
What's
there.
Also funny is that that could be a premise of like a family movie, couldn't it? That's Drop Dead Fred. Is it Drop Dead Fred?
Yeah.
Or that film that John Krasinski is directed with Ryan Reynolds that's coming out soon about imaginary friends.
Yeah.
So for me, what that says is they don't want to give too much away because they want people to actually go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of the stuff in the media focused very heavily on Chauncey the bear.
Yeah.
In his bear state.
They clearly thought he was marketable.
I mean, I imagine they probably made toys and people would buy a toy of him because they're fucking idiots, but...
Yeah.
It was very confused about what it was trying to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Chauncey himself was a bear, a giant fucking bear, a weird creepy guy that hung around in the basement, a spider, a weird thing that looked like it was an offcut from a Buffy episode.
Yeah.
It was like, what actually was Chauncey?
I think it's meant to be like, it's like it. Yeah. Where it doesn't actually have like a form necessarily. It's
Don't
kind of what you imagine it. Imagine it. Mm-hmm. I could see what they were trying to do. They ripped off better stories.
I think it had its moments, and it was better than Night Swim for me. I feel like Night Swim was at best like an episode of The Twilight Zone or something stretched out beyond its possibilities. Whereas this at least potentially had a film in it. The main thing that was wrong with this film was just the acting was awful.
Yeah.
Every single character was poorly acted.
I think it's poor acting because they didn't have the acting chops to deliver the lines that were given because the dialogue was very on the nose, very expositional.
Especially
dialogue.
Crazy
no,
Neighbor.
Yeah, there was no kind of like subtext in anything they were saying at all. It was all very much like, oh yes, we've got to move house today because you know that's going to be, we want to go back to your family home where you grew up as a child.
Yeah.
It's very, it's, it, there's no,
well, you had really happy times despite the fact your mum died of cancer and you had to be taken away from your dad because he became incredibly violent.
Yeah.
What a happy childhood.
Yeah, why not go back there? Why, who wouldn't want to go back to that house? That's crazy. The acting's terrible in this. Well, I think the acting is the worst I've seen this year, and it's up against some pretty fucking stiff competition.
I'd say the acting, apart from one person, the child, the girl,
she puts in a pretty good performance.
Like the bit where like she has to go with the therapist and she has to have a conversation with Chauncey about how she doesn't want to be friends with him anymore. That bit was acted so well. Like it really felt genuine. Like a child was like really upset breaking up with her best friend. That was kind of the standout moment in the film, I guess, in terms of like acting anyway, from a very young child. But yeah, everything else was just nonsense.
So here's some trivia that will make you want to bash your head against the wall. The family moved into a house on Elm Street.
It wasn't Elm Street, was it?
Yeah. Another imaginary villain proven to be real.
I bet the writers properly wanked themselves off over that detail as well, didn't they?
I bet it was next door to the house from Night Swim as well. Because the film, I know it's a Blumhouse movie, and I was like saying,
we never saw if they had a pool or not.
No, we didn't.
Imagine.
But like it felt like Night Swim in a lot of ways, because Night Swim also had terrible kind of dialogue and very on the nose exposition. It felt like it was kind of painting by numbers of Blumhouse.
The first trailer, which premiered in front of Five Nights at Freddy's, consisted almost entirely of sound effects over a blank screen, encouraging audience to use their imagination. So if they'd have just done that for the whole film, the film would have been better.
Because imagine we made a better film than we did.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
I will admit something, you know, there was, I think you guys know, I'm petrified of spiders, right? Mm-hmm. You're petrified. So in the first scene, you missed the first scene, Dan, but in the first scene's like her dreaming, she's been chased by a spider.
Yeah.
So basically after that bit, I watched it, like, I didn't cover my eyes or anything, I manned up. And I thought to myself, oh, don't tell me the villain in this film's a spider. Mm-hmm. They kept putting so much emphasis on her drawings of the spider. And they also put a lot of emphasis a couple of times on the spider being on the stairs.
Yeah.
Every time someone walked down the stairs, I thought a giant spider was going to jump out or something. So, like, I watched that film so much on edge more than I ever have any other horror film, because I was just waiting for a fucking big spider.
Like, you honestly, were the target audience, Steve.
Right. I mean, it didn't make me like or dislike the film or dislike the film any more or any less, but I did think to myself, like, there was a scene where she put two bits of paper together, there was a spider on the stairs. Mm. But when they had that flashback, when they looked through, she opened up the bit of paper and they saw through the window and the stairs, and then she ran out, her dad came. I thought to myself, oh, here it comes. Here's the bit where the dad turned into fucking, you know, Aragog from fucking Harry Potter. Do you know what I mean? Here we go. Like, then luckily it never kind of came, really. But briefly at the end, obviously, there was the spider bit. But because, as you know, I don't read about films loose until I see them. I thought to myself, have I missed it here? And this film is basically about the villain's a giant spider, because if it is, I might have to walk out. I mean, even if it's CGI, it still scares the shit out of me. So, like, you know, it was, I did watch the film on edge, but for completely different reasons, for probably what other people may have, you know, watched it on edge.
Just but for again, that it proves the point that you imagined a better film than actually happened. You were scared of what you thought was going to happen, but what actually happened. I mean, we obviously, it was quite busy when we saw it, and there was a lot of audible laughing, which I can't imagine they meant to have in there. I laughed a lot during this film.
Oh, me too.
Yeah,
it's like I don't want to say it's a better film than Night Swim. They're both terrible movies. This one was more enjoyable than Night Swim because of how crap it was. Mm. But at the same time, it also felt like a slog to get through. It felt like a long movie.
Yeah,
like,
I checked June, my watch a lot.
Yeah,
like, yeah, same, like, same as well, yeah.
June's like a to almost a 3-hour movie, and I didn't feel its time at all. Whereas this one, like, I felt the time at certain points.
Just let me put it this way. If you're sitting down and you've got Night Swim or this to watch, and you decide you're going to watch one of them, maybe just have a nap instead.
Yeah, I might kill myself instead.
Have a daydream about spiders.
Yeah. Just spend like an hour and a half, just have a nap.
Yeah.
Do a crossword. don't know. Just anything that's not this or Night Swim, because they're both really bad films.
Yeah. But if I had to watch one of them again, I would choose Imaginary.
Yeah, so would I.
Probably would do Imaginary.
Not been a great year for horror films so far after last year, which was fucking incredible.
Well, you say that, Dan, but me and Dan went and saw another film.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes. Do genre tell.
Of horror. We've been dubbing it Demon Boobs because it stars Sydney Sweeney. But its actual title is Immaculate.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to report that, no, it's nothing like Immaculate. It is not an Immaculate film. I would probably put it above Imaginary, would you, Dan?
Oh, definitely. I'd put this above. Well above Imaginary and Night Swim, just because it just felt like a competent movie, like it felt like a proper film. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't amazing, but the performances, you know, were pretty good.
It definitely had decent acting.
Decent acting. You know, the dialogue was very good. None of it was kind of on the nose. Built tension in the right ways. It had some good gore as well at certain moments. So there were kind of things worth seeing about it, and it didn't feel like a slog to get through. Now, I think it was actually quite a short film.
It was only 90 minutes long. We were out by half nine. It was banging.
Well, it was like 20 past nine when we come out. Yeah. Just
Yeah. For the synopsis thing, I mean, I don't know what the IMDb synopsis would be for this, Dan, but essentially Sydney Sweeney is an American nun who turned up at an Italian nunnery, is that what they're called?
A convent, isn't it?
A convent. She's been sent over there.
Nunnery.
It's for nuns where they're her, like elderly.
Yeah, it's like a sort of hospice for nuns.
Yeah.
All elderly nuns are sent there and they basically look after them until they die. But from the get go, there's like a sort of prologue to the credits where we see someone trying to escape from said convent, and she gets buried alive essentially by these weird nuns wearing red velcro over their faces. And then from the get-go, when Sydney Sweeney turns up, something's not quite right, and then for the title of Immaculate, she becomes pregnant but has never had sex. And there's a very cool line of like, did you inspect her when she arrived, doctor? Yes, I did, her hymen was intact.
I was like, that immediately raised questions though. Like, wait a second, did he really like seriously do a full checkup like that?
Isn't that Prince Andrew?
Spoilers, I feel like they would have to because of what transpires. I think that's why he would have done the full checks.
Yeah, it makes sense he would have done the checks, but it just there was no kind of like scene where she must have been like, what the? Why is he choking this?
But it's. Yeah, like Dan said, it's competent. Sydney Sweeney's quite good in it. It is very good. But I was thinking, because I saw the trailer again, everything of note that's sort of interesting is in the trailer. Everything. There is nothing in the trailer or nothing in the film other than the main thing that you can't talk about without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Even like the end, that shot is in the trailer of her face covered in blood. That is in the trailer.
Mm.
So they've literally thrown it all in there. But I would say go and watch it. Like we said, it's only 90 minutes. It is very gory. But again, thinking about it back, I feel like a lot of that gore might have been added.
Yeah.
Because all of it's like cutaway gore. It like cuts to this and then you see the gore and then it cuts back. So I feel like maybe they added it in and thought, you know what? It's not that great. Let's throw some gore in and that might make some people
spice
happy.
It up a bit.
I wonder if they got the rating and then went, fuck it, let's just go crazy with it then.
Yeah,
possibly,
maybe.
Yeah, because it was 18. We're very surprised when the credit card popped up. And it was an 18 rated film, but I don't think it's going to be troubling the top 10 at the end of the year. But it was. I didn't laugh at any point. I don't think where I shouldn't have laughed.
No, I think like
it's an improvement on Night Swim and Imagine.
Yeah. I mean, like for the gore moments it's got in there, the bit that made me most squeamish was actually like her performance in one scene at the end where she's basically going to labor and she's just screaming and it's just the camera's just focused on her face like for the whole time. And it just that made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it doesn't cut away or anything. No. Very, very
you don't intense. See any gore or blood or anything, but it's just her performance.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Worth watching, got nothing else to do.
Films we're looking forward to? Any films? Meet Ghostbusters is the one that stands out.
Yeah, Ghostbusters is coming soon.
Yeah. what is it, One Night with the Devil? Or
Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, that looks amazing. From the trailers I've seen, that's one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that looks amazing. And any TV series anyone's watched recently they want to talk about? I've got one.
I'm three episodes into The Gentleman on Netflix.
It's getting really good reviews.
Yeah, no, it's you can tell it's a Guy Ritchie thing. Mm. It's very loosely set within the universe of The Gentleman. So if you've seen The Gentleman, Guy's dad dies, mm. he becomes the Duke of the estate, and then someone turns up and goes, by the way, do you want to know where your dad was making all his money? And he, under his estate, is one of those weed farms that we mm. saw in The Gentleman.
Yeah.
But basically, every week his brother does something stupid. Or every episode his brother does something stupid and he's then trying to bail out his brother. So it's got all the sort of usual Guy Ritchie tropes. I'm three episodes in. I'm really enjoying it, but it's just like every episode so far, it's been the brother has done something really stupid. It's just like the brother should just be shot in the head.
It's a bit like Peaky Blinders on that front then.
Hmm?
A bit like Peaky Blinders on that front then.
I've not seen Peaky Blinders.
Oh, it's good. Peaky Blinders is really good.
Peaky Blinders is great, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Well, that's the only TV thing I've really watched, to be fair.
So I started watching... sorry, Dan.
No, go on, you go.
No, last weekend, me and Jess had a choice of starting The Gentleman or starting Reacher.
Yeah.
I love Reacher.
We watched the first two episodes of Reacher the other day, and it's really good so far.
I've heard it's good. I have to watch that.
That series two you're watching, or are you starting with one?
So I started with the first series. So obviously it's still quite new, but like... Even like two episodes in, I'm like in love with the character already. I think he's absolutely incredible. I'm really excited to see how it develops. But obviously, not much to report because I've only watched the first two episodes. You know, I'm like, if I watch an episode of my series on my own, I'd have had it all watched by now. But she likes to stagger it out, so like it might be another month to watch the series episodes. But yeah, so far what I've seen so far, really, really good.
Nice. I've just finished Masters of the Air. I really fucking liked this. I thought it was really good.
They filmed a lot of that in Hemel Old Town.
That does not remotely surprise me. It's really good. Do you like Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Band of Brothers if they were flying airplanes?
Not sure I can do that, Dad.
Yeah, well, you're gonna be. You don't have to because they've made a TV series, which is basically that. Further proof: Austin Butler is now just Elvis. Bless him. He's never coming back from that role, unfortunately.
Well, I feel like he's managed to finally shake the voice now, hasn't he? He said he had to have like voice coaching, to get rid of the accent.
Not in this series, he hasn't.
And they filmed that a while ago, didn't they? So that'll be why.
Really goes into detail about how dangerous it was flying a plane over Germany during World War II. I know it sounds bloody obvious, but like, holy shit.
They were just made of like spit and glue, weren't they?
There's a bit where one of them goes, so why do we have to abort takeoff if there's like a cow like on the runway? It's like, surely we'll just plow through that. And he's like, we hit a cow, the whole plane will concertina. Like, because they're made of like, they're so light, the metal they're made of. So they're like, so if you hit a, if you see a cow on the runway, you got to start shooting, basically. Because otherwise, you'd run the risk of killing 10 people on a plane.
Why would they let a cow on a runway anyway? Like, why would they? Because
all
them
the
out?
Runways are basically just the British countryside.
Oh, true. Okay.
So, like, during World War II, they were all, like, stationed in, like, just out of town, like, air bases, like, which is basically just British countryside.
Mm.
I don't think it happened very often, but it's obviously happened by the sounds of things. And the whole thing focuses on the... it's loosely based on real life. Like, you get the feeling some of it's obviously hammed up a bit, but, like... It's based on the unit, the Bloody Hundred, who just lost a ton of fucking planes in World War II. Really, really good. It understands as well that there's only so much. They fly over to France. They drop some bombs. They come back. They can do. Well, they kind of like further the story along. So, yeah, well worth a watch. I genuinely love this film, the TV series. Sorry. It's really, really good.
Hmm.
It's a little bit, and America came over and saved the day.
America, fuck yeah.
Which is kind of true, but...
Fuck the Americans. I'm sick of talking about every time you see something about World War II, it's about how they came over and fucking saved the day.
I'm pretty certain that's
what gets overlooked is Russia. Russia's role. Like, the war would not have been won without them.
Not in this series, it doesn't. I will say that. Like, every episode is like, Russia have moved how far?
But, like, the whole kind of, like, Eastern Front,
yeah,
just, like, you know, just won by Russia, just wouldn't have, yeah.
Well, they forced Germany to fight on two fronts, didn't they? So,
yeah.
And they couldn't handle that. And they were up against a Russian army that was relentless. So, yeah. Anyway, I really like it. It's well worth a watch. The acting is really good. It's genuinely heartfelt. You feel sad when bad things happen. You know, unlike Imaginary or Night Swim. Anything so more?
It's an American show then?
Huh?
It's an American TV show then?
Yeah, so it's set in the same universe as Band of Brothers.
Okay. I know
it's obviously set in the same universe as Band of Brothers. It's set during World War II. But, like, it's a follow-on from Band of Brothers in the Pacific.
Mm.
But with airplanes. And also, it plays into my problem I have with warplanes, which are, I think warplanes are stunningly beautiful. I just hate what they do and hate what they do to the environment. Warplanes would be so much better if they could just sit on the ground looking cool rather than going and dropping bombs, destroying the environment in the process.
All right, you fucking hippie.
I'm saying I fucking love a B-17. I just prefer a B-17 if it wasn't dropping bombs on people. But yeah.
Well, I suppose if it wasn't dropping bombs on people, you wouldn't know what a B-17 was.
Was that, sorry?
If it wasn't dropping bombs on people, you wouldn't know what that aeroplane was.
No. No, so I understand what its primary focus was. I'm just saying it's a beautiful plane. But I don't like what they do. Because I don't really want to see people get blown up in general.
Mm.
That goes for all planes. Cool.
So. It's taking a bit of a turn here, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Anyway. Any more?
No, I'm good.
Nah, cool. Mm-hmm. Right, back again fairly soon. If you want to contact us, hit us up on Twitter. It's just at TMTOOH, or come join the Discord. It's we've got our own channel for that, where we talk about all kinds of things, movies. That's the pinned tweet on the Twitter, or the bio on our Instagram, which is just... TMTOH again. Thank you very much, Dan.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Terry.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you very much.
No worries. And we will be back soon. I can't say exactly when, because let's be honest, we don't really know. But
we'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when.
I would hope, I don't know, sometime after Ghostbusters comes out. Because I want to talk about Ghostbusters, I'm sure. So, yeah. Anyway, ta-ra. Thanks. Bye.
Right, bye.
Bye.
Right, there we go.